ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Let's get the garage door up and get this thing moving.
Motor Talk with Toby Hagen.
Toby, evening.
G'day, Phil.
How are you?
Pretty good.
Discussion topics. There is only one probably at the moment, that is the boom in car electric car sales.
Yeah, it's been taking off and we just got the
500 a day on the new figures, hey?
Yeah, the April sales figures. Yeah, so almost 95,000 cars sold across the country in April and almost 15,000 of them were EVs. So it's so yeah, it's a pretty big number, 16.4% of new vehicles sold, so it's a record for that. But if you delve into some of the market, so mid-sized SUVs, single biggest segment on the market, and five of the top 12 selling mid-sized SUVs were fully electric.
Mm-hmm. RAV4 was number one.
RAV4 was number one, yeah, by a mile. So this is the all-new, well, the largely new RAV4. It's so it got its first, I think, first full month on sale. So it had a huge month at 3,700, top-selling car in the country, which is, we've obviously been talking about, for years now, utes basically leading, the Ford Ranger and the Toyota Hilux dueling it out for the top-selling car. But, yeah, RAV4 topped the market last month. So pretty big one for that. And, yeah, as I said, mid-sized SUVs, a lot of EVs in there. Mid-sized sedans or sedans and passenger wagons. So Toyota Camry leading, but 39% of those medium cars are now EVs.
Mm-hmm.
And interesting, when you delve into the figures, you see the brands that are performing well from an EV perspective, and it's typically newcomer brands. So there's a few exceptions. Kia does pretty well. Hyundai is starting to build up a little bit. But Toyota, for example, is beaten by brands like Geely and BYD and Zeekr. Mazda, pretty much nowhere. Ford, struggling. Volkswagen. So they're all pretty low in terms of the EV cut through, so they've got a bit of catching up to do on that front.
You're bound surprised to hear that sales of diesel,
yeah,
plummeted in April.
Yeah, down 22%, which is pretty big, and it's interesting in that light commercial vehicle segment. So I guess the other than trucks and so on, heavy trucks, but the two strong markets for diesel in Australia is obviously utes and large SUVs, and particularly with the utes, the pickup trucks, we're starting to see more and more hybrid, plug-in hybrid ones come into there, and it's going to keep snowballing in terms of the number of those that keep hitting the market. So, it's the expectation, I think, is that diesel will keep coming off in that market segment, initially to be replaced by hybrids of some sort. And the thing we haven't seen so much of in Australia yet, but I think is coming, it's certainly hitting America pretty hard, is so-called EREVs, or extended range electric vehicles. So this is another one to throw into the mix.
Oh, yeah.
Very similar to plug-in hybrids, except whereas a plug-in hybrid, the engine can still power the car, with an EREV, it never does. So it's basically you charge up a battery pack independently. It's also got a petrol engine there to act as a generator. So it drives like an EV. It's only the electric motors driving the car, but you've got an onboard generator there to get you further down the road. So that sort of thing, particularly with, your Ford F-150s and those big pickup trucks in the States, that's where they're heading with that. And I think it's only a matter of time until we start seeing a bit more of that in Australia.
Mm. Okay, yes. Well, you're bound surprised. Well, they need to shake a leg and get on with a better charger rollout, given the numbers of cars that are hitting the road.
Yeah, definitely. I think
it's no good, is it?
No, it's. I mean, it depends. It's difficult. It's because if you look at, I guess, petrol and diesel, you say, okay, we throw more cars onto the market, we need more petrol stations, or you need more fuel coming into the country. With EVs, so much of the charging is done at home. So, in some cases, 90-95% on average, people charging at home. So it's really just those holiday periods generally and the longer distance trips where you need to really sort it out during those peak times. But yeah, you're right. I mean, generally we need to have better charging. And there are pockets of the country, in a city, Melbourne and Sydney, for example, where there are suburbs where you don't have much off-street parking. So they've got to sort out some
Exactly.
Some
I mean, if you've got a standalone house with panels and a battery, etc., it's a no-brainer to have electric car and you live in the city.
Yeah.
So it's probably a no-brainer. If you live in an apartment,
trickier.
No, forget it, probably, because the charging infrastructure is probably not there for you.
Yeah, I mean, it's ultimately all you need is a PowerPoint, but I've heard some crazy things coming out of apartments, well, strata blocks and so on, with all sorts of restrictions and so on, and concerns about it. And look, to be fair, there are some older apartment blocks where the wiring may not be up to having, you know, that's 10 or 20 EVs charging at once.
No.
But there are ways around that. There's software and there are charging systems and so on that are designed to sort that sort of stuff out.
If your apartment's built next to a data center, you could hack into their power thing.
Yeah.
There'd be plenty of juice there.
That's right.
There's another new Chinese brand. But if you'd like to give Toby a ring, by the way, 1-300-800-222. Ben from Beverly Hills, I'll go to you in 1 second, Ben. I see you. There's more Chinese brands of car than you can poke a stick at, Toby. I'm worried about your job, actually.
Yeah,
because
trying to figure it out.
I was thinking this driving in, I was thinking, Toby's, I'm not going to quiz him because, you know, like, I don't know how we'll go on this, but how many Chinese brands are there in Australia right now?
Oh, there are probably about a dozen now.
Just Chinese brands.
Chinese brands, but there's that again coming.
And so there's another one coming right now.
Yeah,
I love this
one. Another
one
just confirmed.
It's called iCar.
iCar, yeah, which...
Spelt I-C-A-U-R.
Yeah, but only spelt like that in Australia. Overseas, in markets, it's called iCar as you'd normally spell it. So I'm not quite sure why they're changing it for Australia. But yeah, that's another one that's coming. And
that's a cherry.
That's one of Chery's brands. Yeah, so Chery is huge in China, and it's already got multiple brands in Australia. Obviously, Chery, Jaecoo, Omoda. Mm. Now they're saying iCar, and another one, Jetour or Jetour, is also coming. So that's another Chery brand as well. So and moving into the four-wheel drive space, and this is something we're seeing. I guess we've seen the Chinese brands focus on the more affordable end of the market and the particularly SUVs, smaller cars generally. They're stepping up in size, they're stepping up in luxury, and they're starting to head towards things like performance cars, luxury cars, and heavy-duty off-roaders. They really see off-road as a market that they can tackle, and they're doing some interesting designs and so on along those lines. So, strap yourself in. I think it's going to be a busy couple of years.
Hey, by the way, the government's announced, this is part of its pre-budget announcements, that it's going to wind back the FBT exemption on EVs.
Mm.
Is that going to have much impact on sales, do you think?
Yeah, this is the big question. I mean, it's not happening, starts next year, and it's sort of a three-year wind back, roughly. It's starting with, at the moment, you can go up to about $91,000 to get the FBT exemption. They're going to wind that back to $75,000. Then they're starting to wind back the benefits. So whereas now you can have you don't pay any FBT, fringe benefits tax, they're winding it back so you can only claim, say, 25% discount off the FBT. So so will it have an impact? It would have to have some impact, you'd imagine. I guess in the next two or three years, we're expecting obviously the market to push down the EV and hybrid path even further, partly because of the CO2 emissions regulations we've got in and partly because of competition. We've got all these new brands coming in and you know, China starting to dominate with a lot of them, and China is very much an electrified market. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a fair bit of that. So I think it'll have an impact. I don't think it's going to kill the market by any sense. It's going to be still fairly strong, I'd imagine.
Mm. Annie from Dandenong says, does it matter if they are Chinese, Phil? I don't suppose so, Annie, no.
Yeah, I mean, this is...
we're not having a shot at them because of where they're made.
No, just pointing out that it's that they're from China. I mean,
and
it's
the world has changed, that's all. Yeah,
the world has changed, and it's probably no different to... We saw, obviously, the Korean car makers come in the 90s.
That's right.
In the 70s, we saw the Japanese come in. So there's, and I was listening to a podcast the other day about, it's an American podcast, and they were talking about the Japanese car makers coming in and having a huge impact on the global automotive industry, but particularly the American industry. And ultimately, they worked it out. You know, the competition continues, and you've still got strengths and weaknesses.
My dad was a Ford man, always bought a Ford, you know, year after year. Mm. But in the end, he bought a Corolla.
Yeah.
Ben from Beverly Hills has been waiting on there. Hello, Ben.
Hi, Phil. How are you going? Pretty, hi, Toby.
Yeah, pretty good. What's on, Ben?
Well, I've got a Skoda Octavia 110, which is very frugal, and the wagon part of this is very important, Toby.
Yep.
I love wagons, and I was thinking, because I always do this, being a RevEd, I always go and look at the appropriate sites to look what's next. And I've been thinking about a 2020 Toyota, it's a grey import, a Toyota Corolla wagon.
Yep.
A hybrid. Now, they're going for about $25,000, which, you know, for a six-year-old Toyota, I don't reckon it's too bad. The Skoda, probably through boredom on the drive home, Toby. I live at Beverly Hills, work at Bondi. I don't know if you know Sydney all that well. I can get 5.2 litres per 100.
Yeah.
Trying, obviously. Yep. It's a matter. Now, when you get used to that sort of mileage, you don't want to go backwards, and I love a wagon, so I just have your thoughts on a grey import Corolla wagon.
Yeah, well, the one thing is, I have obviously haven't driven the grey import one, but there'd be a lot of similarities with the regular hatches and sedans we got here in terms of drivetrain and so on. Yeah. And yeah, you'll be able to probably beat your Skoda, at least around town, on the open road. Maybe not, because I imagine the Skoda's pretty efficient on the open road. Often those European cars are pretty good at higher speed touring. But the one thing I say with anyone looking at a grey import, look at insurance costs. So some insurance companies shy away from them a bit, because if you have a crash, it's harder to get parts. Because Toyota Australia will not stock parts for that car. And also be aware of if there are major recalls. And we obviously saw that enormous Takata airbag recall, which was a global recall that hit just about every car maker. And it was enormous in terms of the number of cars that it impacted. And obviously the importers who bring the car into the country, they're the ones who have to fix those issues. So in that case, it wouldn't be Toyota Australia that would have to address a recall like that. It would be whoever imports the car into the country needs to do that. So just a couple of things to keep in mind. That's part of the reason they're obviously cheaper, is because there are some negatives here and there. But, if you buy carefully, and a lot of these, it's big business now in terms of these grey imports, and a lot of the companies that do it do a very good job of it and do a lot of research. They've got their own spotters and buyers and so on over in Japan that figure out the right ones and throw them on a ship and then sell them here. So it's but just be aware of those other things, I guess.
Great, thanks, Toby. Okay. We're boiled down to insurance, I'd imagine.
Yeah. No worries, Ben. Thank you. Good luck with it all as well. Grant from Brizzy. G'day, Grant.
Yes, good evening, gents. I'm just wondering why we haven't really looked at the vehicle-to-home issue with batteries, because I actually had quotes on solar installation here and a battery ranging from anything $16,000 up to about $28,000 for a 13-kilowatt system and a 45-kilowatt battery system. Mm-hmm. Most of these vehicles have 60-kilowatt batteries sitting there, mm-hmm. and most people do very, very small kilometres each day. Mm. There's this huge battery capacity. We're not developing this industry.
Yeah, you're right. It is a huge battery capacity, or a car park full of big batteries. As you say, most of them aren't getting used every day. So vehicle to home or vehicle to grid, being able to feed back from the car into your house or the electricity grid, it certainly has been looked at. It is available today. With a Nissan Leaf, it's the only EV on the market that can do it. Some people have had.
But who wants to buy a Nissan Leaf with an inferior battery?
Yeah,
this is the whole thing. What I'm saying is the Chinese have. Look, I live in Shanghai and I've seen the development of vehicles.
Yeah.
When I'm in there, and I actually see the Europeans helping design these vehicles.
Mm.
And if anyone thinks that China's not going to actually take over the market, they're just having.
Yeah,
they've got a blindfold on because.
No, and I think the car makers, the traditional car makers, realise that now, absolutely.
Yeah.
But the car industry, you can't just click your fingers and things happen. They need they need years literally to try and fight back, and that's you're starting to see the fight back now, particularly with some of the Japanese brands. But yeah, so vehicle to grid, vehicle to home is being looked at. Most of the car makers are looking at it. There was a regulatory issue in Australia, so it took quite a while to get the regulations approved by the government. And I remember chatting to someone in the industry who said one of the challenges was the government was struggling to get its head around, is it an EV charger or is it an inverter or a solar system type gadget? And they were trying to figure out how to deal with it. But apparently that's been solved. There's also the issue of feeding so much electricity back into the grid. So that was one of the things. They had to chat to the grid operators and stuff to make sure that it wasn't going to crash the system. It has been approved, but now we're still waiting on some of the hardware to enable it and the car makers to enable it on their cars. And one of the issues some of the car makers have is use of the battery. So they currently, most of them currently provide 160, 200, sometimes 250,000 kilometres of coverage for their batteries, warranty coverage up to 10 years. So suddenly you've got a car that, you know, might cycle its battery once a week on average probably, all of a sudden potentially cycling that battery 5 or 10 times more often. So from a warranty perspective, they've got to work out how they deal with that. So there are various factors at play. Rest assured it is happening a little bit glacially, but it is heading that way, and a lot of car makers are trying to make it happen because for exactly what you said, they realise that there's a huge battery there, big appeal, potentially sell them some cars.
Okay. All right, Grant, thank you. Linda in Semaphore says, something to consider for the more computerised car. Is there a possibility that one day the road rules will be programmed into the car so it becomes impossible to speed or even run a red light? I mean, Linda's question intrigued me because I was on a golf course the other day in one of those electric golf carts, and they've programmed it so that it doesn't, you can't go, literally cannot drive on parts of the course where you're not allowed to drive. It's just, the motor just stops.
Yeah.
And also it's speed governed, so you can't go fast.
Yep.
So you know, you could do that.
With yeah, absolutely. The answer is yes. Is that so it
absolutely
could be done.
On the Hume, for example, on a big motorway, you could you could easily
govern them all.
Govern them all. Say, look, no one can go over 110.
Mm-hmm. That's absolutely it. So yeah, it could 100% be done. And in Europe at the moment, they're working on. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's in now or coming in very soon.
I'm not saying it's going to be popular.
No, that's it. So they're working on systems whereby you effectively can't speed, where the car prompts you, starts beeping, and I think there's an override eventually. You can push through it with the accelerator or something, but essentially the independent crash regulators are pushing to have that technology as part of the testing.
It's certainly part of the future, yeah. I know. All right, 1-300-800-222 is the number. I'm thinking of going electric, MG5S or the Atto 3. What do you reckon? Says my texter.
It's MGS5. Or the BYD
Atto
3.
Atto 3,
I would tend a tiny bit towards the S5. It's a newer car. It's good, fun little rear-wheel drive, so good to drive. The Atto 3's front-wheel drive. So both of them good. I would say don't limit yourself to those two. You can also have a look at a Geely EX5, for example. A GAC Ion V is also pretty good buying in that market. But between those two you've mentioned, I'd tend towards the S5.
Okay, Alan from Sturt. G'day, Alan.
Yes, hello. Hello, Phil. Toby, there seems to be a change in the lighting systems of some cars. So when you have twilight and you turn on your side lights, most cars, they would have the rear lights will come on as well. There are now several cars where you look at them and you think they don't have their lights on. And then you see them turn and you see that they have their parking lights on the front, but no rear lights on the back.
Yeah.
Are you aware of this and what's the reason for it?
So it's not parking lights that they've got on. It's called DRLs or daytime running lights. So most new cars, not all, but most new cars have daytime running lights. So the idea is that it's usually a bright LED during the day so that they come on automatically. As soon as you start the car, bang, those front lights are on, but they don't do the rears at the same time. Obviously, then when it gets darker, it's designed to effectively, it will dim the daytime running lights because they're quite bright at night, at night, and then it will bring on the rear lights as well. So similar to what parking lights are. It'll go straight to headlights essentially. So, but you can on some cars, so it'll have, you know, off, auto, and then you can manually override beyond there. But if someone's got it switched to off, then it will generally run the daytime running lights and that's it. So that's someone who has got the setting on or got it on the wrong setting basically has done that. So I know exactly what you're talking about. I was driving in here tonight. I had a car doing exactly that. I came up behind it thinking, he hasn't got his lights on, and drove past it and saw that the DRLs were on. So, so that's what's going on.
Okay.
Thanks very much, Tommy.
That's all right. Thanks, Alan. 1-300-800-222 is the number. Talk to Toby. You can do it directly. You'll get straight through if you want one. 1-300-800-222. Mike from Lane Cove. G'day, Mike.
Yeah, hi. Look, I was just interested in a used hybrid that will do all electric to about 70 kilometres an hour before it sort of kicks in with the engine. And I guess I'm sort of kind of daunted with the so many Chinese choices. So the only one I could really see was the Mitsubishi Eclipse, but I don't know what's quite happening with Mitsubishi. Like, I'm trying to avoid anything Nissan at the moment with all of the structural changes with the company. So, yeah.
Well, keep in mind that Nissan and Mitsubishi have an alliance. They are separate companies, but they do share a lot. And if you have a look at the latest Nissan Navara and Mitsubishi Triton, they're the same car with a different badge on them. So they're so there's a lot of sharing that goes on between those two companies. So so in terms of hybrids, you know, the ones you're talking about are plug-in hybrids, so the Mitsubishi Eclipse Cross or the Outlander, the next size up. Those plug-in hybrid systems are the Chinese ones are generally sort of next generation. So they've got generally bigger batteries. They've got bigger electric motors, so they drive more on electricity, whereas the Mitsubishis do it okay, but the minute you go past, I'm guessing, roughly half throttle, it'll want to fire up the engine as well, whereas the Chinese ones will rely more on the electric motor, give you more of that EV driving experience before firing up the petrol engine. So, and they'll go up to 100, 110 k's an hour as well, as will the Mitsubishi, but yeah.
So can you give me sort of something that's
well, probably the one that's sort of that. So the Outlander used to be, the Mitsubishi Outlander used to be the best-selling plug-in hybrid in Australia. Then the BYD C-Line 6 came along and it was the top-selling plug-in hybrid. So if you're looking at second-hand, I'd tend you towards that C-Line 6 because it's going to be – there'll be more of them on the used car market because I guess the next batch of them arrived in the last 6 or 12 months, and we've started to see, you know, GWM, Chery, and there's a bunch of them out there that will all do, as I said, all do exactly that in terms of giving you that more EV driving experience. So, yeah, Havel H6 and Chery Tiggo 7s and Tiggo 4s and that sort of stuff.
So does the engine kick in, is it like the Mitsubishi's got a clutch where the clutch actually, the engine starts powering the wheels? Does the Chinese run, is it a generator type thing?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both. They do it a bit differently. So the Mitsubishi runs a standard transmission, and then it's depending on how much power you're calling on and your speed and so on, it'll fire up the engine. But as I said, it happens relatively soon by modern plug-in hybrid vehicle standards. The Chinese ones, a lot of them don't bother with a traditional gearbox, so they actually won't have, at low speeds, even if the engine starts as a generator, it will not be powering the wheels. It doesn't tend to power the wheels until 50, 60, 70 k's an hour. So they save a bit of weight and a bit of money on a gearbox, so they don't need a traditional gearbox. Sometimes they'll have a 3 or 4 speed transmission, but it'll, as I said, it focuses on the higher speeds. So yeah, they tend to do it a bit differently like that. So they can sort of do both at higher speeds. And if you're, say, on a freeway, you're trying to overtake a caravan or something, and you floor it, it will absolutely drive the wheels. The engine will drive the wheels, but the electric motor will still be kicking in as well. But at lower speeds, it tends to be very focused on the electric motor.
So what's the deal with all of the, you know, I guess one of the other criticisms is spare parts and servicing is sort of controlled by the Chinese suppliers, whereas at least Mitsubishi has that sort of traditional service outlet, and you've got choice and mechanics can get involved versus, you know, the spare parts issues and things like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's one of the things that any newcomer brand struggles with is after-sales support, and some of the Chinese brands haven't done it well initially. I think most of them now realise that that they need to work hard on that, because the negative publicity that comes out of it if you don't get it right is not really worth it. So I remember chatting to the boss of Chery, the local boss of Chery, who was saying that they are working very, very hard on that because they realise that that's a really important part, because so many people say exactly what you said. I trust Toyota, Mazda, Ford, whoever it might be, because they're here. They've got a huge number of dealers. They've been doing it for decades, whereas they're not sure with the Chinese brands. But most of them these days, I mean, even Mitsubishi, for example, it's got the 5-10-year warranty. So 5-year standard warranty, 10 years if you get it serviced within the Mitsubishi network, and Nissan's doing a similar thing. A lot of brands are now going down that path to try and stop you going to independent mechanics. It doesn't force you, but it encourages you to go back to them, because they'll offer you a deal and extend the warranty. So, it's you know, you still can use independent mechanics with any brand. And they should theoretically be able to get parts, but you know, these days the brands themselves are working harder to keep you within their network.
Okay. All right, Mike, thank you. 1-300-800-222. Toby's here. This is Motor Talk. Jordan from Mackay in Queensland. G'day, Jordan.
Hey. I'm looking for something that's going to tow a caravan. I've been looking at the Ford Super Duties. They seem like they're, they tick all the boxes, but, you know, just the electrics in all these new cars, you know, like a fuel water light comes on and rates it to no power.
Well, you better go back 20 years because you're not going to get around that with any brand. Electronics are cars are run. Cars are computers cars are these
run
days.
Cars are run on chips these days.
Yeah, that's it. They're run by computers, and every car on the market has the potential to have an issue with an electronic failure. So, and as you say, those limp home modes, and I've experienced it in the middle of nowhere. I've been in the outback where they've gone into limp home modes, and it can be pretty frustrating. But unfortunately, every single brand on the market is the same. So whether it's the Super Duty, a Toyota Land Cruiser 70 Series, anything is going to have the potential to do that sort of thing. So it's
like the Toyotas, we got a heap of 70s and 79s here, and any of that stuff happens, and you get a lot on the dash, but it doesn't actually
stop
it. You can drive for another 1,000 Ks if you need to.
Don't tell a dealer that.
Yeah. Oh well, all of our stuff's got too many Ks. But the Toyota will give you a light on the dash to tell you it's an issue, but you can drive it until it dies if you need to.
Yeah.
Whereas you see too many horror stories with some of these other ones where as soon as it thinks something's wrong,
it'll do that. So I guess all I'd say is, I mentioned before, cars going into limp home mode. Well, I've had that with the Toyota in the Outback where it's gone into a limp home mode and I've been down on power and had to try and work out how to deal with it. So it can, in your cars, you've obviously been lucky. And the one thing Toyota generally does, it focuses on reliability, durability, making sure cars can deal with some pretty ordinary conditions. But all I'm saying is they can all do it. They'll all have a limp home mode for some potential issue, trying to protect other components within the car. So, the one thing with that Super Duty, it's or Ford Ranger generally, and that V6 engine has had some reliability issues. But, they say they're working on it. They say they've worked on it a fair bit with the Super Duty to try and ensure it doesn't have issues. And as you say, it ticks a lot of boxes elsewhere.
Exactly. Yeah.
It ticks a lot of the boxes, and then makes you wonder about the other stuff.
All right, Jordan. Good luck. But if you're trying to get a simple car where you could open the bonnet,
That's it. I was chatting to someone today, and they said, "Oh, no one does DIY on their cars anymore." And I said, "That's because you pop the bonnet. You can't get a spanner in there. Like it's all packed in so tight. You used to pop the bonnet on old cars, and it looks like you could fit another engine in some of them. Like it's
you could certainly get in and change the oil filter, for example.
Yeah, you could look around and figure things out.
Filter wrench on it, but now you can't.
No, these days you pop it, and you're like, wow, it's pretty busy in there.
Forget it." Okie doke. Ian from Brisbane on the new Geely. G'day.
Yeah, hi. It's Ian from Brisbane. Just wondering if Toby had driven the new Geely, which I believe is being released in Melbourne tomorrow or the next day.
You're talking the EX2?
Yes.
Haven't driven it. No, I've seen it, had a bit of a look at it, but no, I haven't driven it. So there's a lot of excitement around this car, though, because it's going to be, it is the top-selling car in China, was last year. And they haven't announced the pricing yet in Australia. I imagine that'll happen probably tomorrow. But the expectation is it'll be somewhere around about $30,000. So pretty sharp on the pricing. But no, I haven't driven it yet. So looking forward to driving it, though, because, talk about these big brands. Geely is one of the big ones. And as I said, that car is the top-selling car in China.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm just looking for around town driving after I retire.
Definitely, obviously, wait to learn about that one and have a drive, but also look at the other things. There's the GAC Ion UT, the MG4 Urban, the BYD Atto 1 and 2. So there's a lot in that sort of, $30,000-ish mark of cars. So,
Okay.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Ian. Bye-bye. Little Brother Trucker says, my 33-year-old turbo diesel 80 series has got no limp mode.
Yeah, no, that's why I said to him, hallelujah, go back 20 or 30 years. Right. No, the older cars don't, and they will happily destroy themselves. No. But they were, you know, simpler times, and yeah, go back to those old cars, and didn't have to worry about any of those electronics.
David's in Haberfield. G'day, David.
Yeah, hello. Good evening.
Hi.
I just had a question. You were talking about the lights before.
Mm.
I've got a 4-year-old Honda HR-V. You drive around with it on auto or on off, and then you got to turn it on when it starts to get dark.
No, just leave it on auto. So that,
leave it on auto.
Yeah, just leave it on auto, and the car will figure it out. So it's got light sensors and stuff in there to work out when it comes on. So theoretically, as I said, it should have your daytime running lights on when it's bright, and then when it's dark, or it'll put the headlights on. So so yeah, just leave it on auto the whole time. Don't think about it.
And right, you only have to change it if you want high beam when you're out in the country or something.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. Yep. And we always the only other time.
Not very good at all.
What's that? Sorry.
The manual, written manual on this vehicle is not very good at all. It's not very direct how it explains things.
Yeah, well. You're lucky it's got a written manual.
I was going to say, you're very lucky it's got one, David. I bought a new car recently and no manual.
No, often it's just digital these days. So, yeah.
I know what you mean.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Good on you, mate. Bye-bye. Yeah, that's true about lights, isn't it? Once upon a time, you had to really think about it.
Yeah.
These days, you just switch it to auto and then you never think about it. I don't think I've touched the light selector in my car ever.
Yeah, and I know some people have had a criticism with modern cars because generally instrument cluster is illuminated anyway, so that, you know, in a really old car, you knew you didn't have your headlights on because you couldn't see the instruments, whereas now a lot of them, the instruments are lit up, so that's not an obvious sign. And the daytime running lights around town can give you a bit of a glow out the front of the car anyway. So I can understand how people sometimes don't realise they got their lights on, but just leave it on auto and that'll sort things for you.
Josh and Unley, tech on the text line, Toby, should I worry about teaching my daughter manual?
Well, I'm teaching my daughter a manual, so...
Toby's teaching Chloe on the V8.
Well, we were.
We moved, have we?
Well, yeah, it had to go back, so... But, and look, to be fair, she's not a fan of driving a manual, but she does it quite well actually now. You know, the first couple of weeks she struggled, but she is pretty good at it now. But should you bother, you know, technically no, the manuals are a dying breed, but the reason I want her to learn, I want her to understand a bit about the mechanics of the car, but also... Also, in an older car, which is typically what younger buyers drive, you know, she'll at least be able to drive it if she has to. So
they'll probably eventually disappear, though, won't they?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I think they're gone eventually. But it's almost like you know, when automatic Instamatic cameras and so on started coming out and people said, oh, you need to know how to use a film camera and how to do all of that, and whereas these days everyone's given up on that and you just go straight to digital and move on.
Yeah, leaving lights on auto is also extremely important in tunnels, including daytime, says my texter. Yeah, well, including actually driving along city streets. I pulled down the main road of my place the other day and there was a bloke barreling along at a reasonable clip. Didn't have his headlights on. It was at night.
Yeah.
And I know the reason why, because he's driven out of his driveway onto the well-lit road and, you know, he thinks he can see everything.
Yeah, so he's okay.
So he's okay. But yeah. If you left it on auto, that wouldn't happen.
No, that's right. Interesting, though, that that comment about the tunnels, and mostly, yeah, absolutely works fine. But I had a Cadillac Lyric, so the electric Cadillac, maybe a year or so ago, and every time I popped out of a tunnel, so it would dim the digital instrument cluster in the tunnel.
Yeah.
Then I'd come out of the tunnel, it'd be bright again, daylight, and it would take 3 or 4 seconds to then re-illuminate or brighten that screen. So for 3 or 4 seconds, I was blind in terms of what speed I was doing and all that sort of stuff. It was pretty frustrating.
Yep. All right. This is Motor Talk, and you're with Toby Hagen.
For the thinkers, night owls, and the curious.
This is Nightlife with Philip Clark
on ABC Local Radio.
This is an edition of Motor Talk with Toby Hagen. Tom from Elstonwick, hello.
Hey, just want to ask, like, is there ever going to happen like a right to repair? Like, because most of the males in Australia, they are backyard mechanics. You know how you used to fix the cars. Is going to ever happen with these electric cars? Because I would love to swap batteries to make us higher capacity, lower capacity, and make it a bit simple that people can do some sort of a, like, increase the battery capacity and reduce the battery capacity, or, like, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, independent mechanics can work on EVs and modify EVs and all that sort of stuff. The same, you know, the same laws apply for internal combustion engine or EVs. The challenge with a battery or an electric car's battery is the cost. So it is by far the most expensive component in the car, tens of thousands of dollars worth of battery as a general rule. And so modifying it, putting in a bigger battery or a smaller battery or whatever you want to do is likely to not make financial sense. And in some EVs, the battery is the structure of the car. So they actually save some weight in the chassis, in the structure of the car, by making the battery a structural component. So in that case, it would be extremely difficult to do. But in any other case, it's just, I don't think, going to make sense. It'd be like buying a new car and saying, you know, I don't want the V6 engine, I want a V8. Yeah, you can do it, but it's probably going to cost you 20 or 30 grand, and you're better off buying another car, is the short story. And I think it'll be similar with EVs.
Mm, okay. All right. Thanks, Tom. Yes. Leaving lights on autos also. Oh, no, we've talked about that in tunnels. That's true. I just bought a Volkswagen ID Buzz, says Corey from Brisbane, 2 months ago. Oh, this is the combi looking
thing.
Yeah,
electric combi, yeah.
And I saw on Facebook yesterday there's a new software update. Do I need to do anything?
Your car should prompt you. So it's similar to what happens with your phone tells and stuff. You. Yeah, the car will come up with a thing in the screen telling you there's a new software, and it'll generally tell you what that software changes. So sometimes it's really minor. Sometimes it'll just be, you know, fixing a tiny issue on the screen. Other times it can be quite big. It can be something to do with the safety systems or how the car drives. So it really depends. But the car will prompt you. It'll usually tell you to similar to your phone, download the software first. So once you've downloaded it, then you've got to install it. And it'll typically say, you know, make sure the car's parked, lock it, and it will take 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever it is. So you generally do it, you know, when you park the car at night, wake up in the morning and it's okay to go. So the car should prompt you, short story.
That's the short answer, yeah. Jim from Canberra. Hi, Jim.
G'day, Phil and Toby.
Hello.
I had an interesting couple of days this week when I bought a car, GAC Ion V, and you mentioned it a couple of times tonight, and it's a fantastic car. It has all the boxes ticked, all the comforts, and at the right price. And in fact, I got to the stage of sending the money off, the money transfer, and then started worrying because I couldn't find a supplier for the tow bar. And in fact, both the GAC ANV and the Geely EX5, neither of them can in fact fit a tow bar. Mm. They've got 0 kg tow capacity.
Yep.
And it's just something people need to be careful about, because the salesman, you know, he wasn't trying to scam me. He just didn't realise either.
Mm.
And it was just an honest mistake both sides.
Yeah.
And
relatively common in the EV market. So most of them do allow some sort of towing, usually lighter duty, but Teslas, until about 2 or 3 years ago, the Teslas coming into Australia couldn't tow, and weirdly, overseas they could, exactly the same car could, they just hadn't certified them to tow in Australia. They have now on both the Teslas, both the Model 3 and the Model Y, but some of them don't have any tow capacity, and while most people, you know, I've had some people say, okay, that's fine, I don't need to tow a trailer, but they want to put a bike rack or something on. And that's where I had someone ask me that, saying, what are the legalities of that? And I sort of looked into it and ultimately decided that I don't think – I think the car maker could push back on it if you're fitting some sort of tow bar, and they've said that it's not certified to do it. So, But definitely something to be aware of. So, you know, a couple of areas EVs haven't focused on massively to date is towing – and spare tyres, which is Phil's favourite.
Don't start me.
Yeah. Okay. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, Jim. Bye. No, that is right. Chris in Sydney says, I've got a 20-plus-year-old Toyota Echo. A bit rusty and crappy, but basically bulletproof.
Yeah.
I don't want bings and bongs. I just want some basic, cheap, good quality, second-hand reliability. $20,000. Recommendations.
Yeah, well, you're going to get some bings and bongs. So everything, the so-called ADAS or advanced driver assistance systems, they're on everything these days. You know, every car has auto braking and it's got, most of them have got self-steering and all that sort of stuff. So there will be, unfortunately, some bings and bongs even if you go 2 or 3 years old. But recommendations, you know, if you want really simple, something like a Kia Picanto is small and not a bad place to start. You can obviously look at the Echo replacement, the Toyota Yaris, which these days is hybrid only, but that was it went that way about 2 years ago. So before that, you can get a non-hybrid one as well. And, you know, a Mazda 2, those sorts of cars. So that would probably be the area I'd be looking at for just simple, fewer bings and bongs. And I find the best brands for no bings and bongs are I'm talking generally here, but the European brands tend to do it really well. Some of the Japanese brands, not all. So Toyota, I think, does it well. Mitsubishi has this, the latest Triton, the driver monitoring system can be a bit frustrating. It gets pretty angry at you if you're not fully focused the whole time. And when I say fully focused, you go to look at the center console, the center screen for a bit, and it can sometimes get angry at you if you're looking at the center screen. But so, yeah, that'd be my or where okay. I'd be starting.
Alrighty, Julie in queue. Hi, Julie.
Hi, boys. Lovely segment. I'd like some your comments, Toby, on I want to buy a new hybrid and I need a very good tight turning circle in my small apartment car park and I want a mid-SUV or a spacious small SUV with leather seats.
Wow. Okay, so the one that's going to catch me out because I haven't got all the turning circles in my head.
Yeah.
So that one,
you know, the bad turning circles.
Well, I can't think of any that are terrible in that sort of small to mid-sized SUV segment.
I drive a Captiva, and it's shocking. It's really
yeah. Okay, yeah.
But that word applies generally to the Captiva, doesn't it?
Yeah, some people used to add an R to it. There was, but
it's normally spelled with a K at the front of it. I thought.
So
I've had three, and they've never let me down.
Oh, you're the only person who bought them.
Yeah. I mean, if you're looking at small to mid-sized, so the mid-sized SUVs have been growing in size and they're these days decent size. So I'd almost suggest that next tier down, you know, Toyota Corolla Cross, Hyundai Kona, Kia Seltos a lot. Kia Seltos doesn't have a hybrid at the moment, so rule that one out. They have just shown off the new Kia Seltos, which will be out in 4 or 5 months, 6 months, and that is hybrid only. So in terms of what to get, I would put the Hyundai Kona top of the list because it's just a really great – it's a great car to drive and pretty sharp value. A left fielder, a Nissan Qashqai, is a little bit different. So that's got the e-power system where it's quite electric in the way it drives. So it's only the electric motor driving the car, and that's quite a nice thing to drive. And as I said, Toyota Corolla Cross, but I'd stick the Kona up the top.
Okay. And Mazda CX-5 or CX-3, not in the race?
Well, neither of them are hybrid. So, they don't have hybrid versions of those yet. So Mazda will have, they won't. They're just about to do a new CX-5 and it's not going to be hybrid initially. So that's ruled out. And the CX-3 is quite old and doesn't have a hybrid. So, no, you've got to step up to Mazda CX-60 before you get a hybrid. And even then, it's a little bit different. They do mild hybrid ones, and then you go to the full plug-in hybrid, and that's more expensive. So, so no, I'd cross that one off the list. So, stick with the Kona.
Okay. Good luck.
Thanks.
Good luck, Julie. Thank you. Toby, the Suzuki Ignis has very few bings and bongs.
It does, and that's one of the more simple.
My partner loves hers. This is Brant. But Brant, I don't know how much we pay attention to Brant. Well, we do. We love Brant. He lives in Cairns and he's got a 64-year-old Valiant.
Wow.
Cool. Which he loves, and we love it when he sends photos of it on your Brant.
Yeah.
A Suzuki Ignis, yeah.
Yeah, Ignis. And so, some of those Japanese brands don't bing and bong too much. And the Ignis is obviously towards the bottom end of the scale in terms of price. So it will have it's not going to have the full artillery of features. But yeah.
John in Geelong, have we got time? Yeah, no, we've got time for another couple. G'day, John.
Yeah, how you going?
Pretty good.
I was wondering what's happened with Nissan in England.
What has happened with Nissan?
Apparently, they froze the factory. And the other thing is, Mercedes and Yazia got an electric motor that weighs 12.7 kilos and produces 1,000 horsepower.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. So that electric motor that Mercedes ended up buying the company, that Yasa company, the axial flux motor. So yeah, it's a smaller electric motor that could put out a fair bit of power. And that motor is actually in the Ferrari plug-in hybrids. So the SF90 and the 296 Ferrari use those or the motors from that company. And yeah, Mercedes is looking to use them in AMGs and so on. Although weirdly, Mercedes has just announced that they're going to start putting more V8s in and get rid of some of their plug-in hybrids. So it's they're heading the other way, having gone down the plug-in hybrid route to meet emission standards. So in terms of Nissan with its factory, I'm not sure, to be honest, the Sunderland plant. I don't know where it's at other than what I've seen, which is they're talking about, shutting part of it. But not sure.
Okay. Righto, John, thank you. What have you been driving, Toby, just before you go?
Well, I've actually been in the new RAV4, which was which was pretty cool. So I spent a little bit of time in that, and that was it's good fun to drive. I spent a bit of time in the Geely Starray. I did about 2,500 kilometres in that. Right. So
What's that?
So it's a mid-sized plug-in hybrid electric car. So it's it was getting, they claim 900 and something, 960 odd kilometres. I was getting, I think, 750 odd, 800 between the electric motor or the electric side, the battery and the petrol engine or the fuel tank.
Yep.
So it did a reasonable job. The one thing I found, though, it was always optimistic in terms of how far you could drive. So you get in it and it's like, oh, you'll get 900 and something kilometres, and then that would slowly drop down to less. So I was losing more kilometres than what I was doing, basically off the estimate. So that was a little bit frustrating. GWM Tank 300 plug-in hybrid I've also driven recently. So the tank is the sort of jeepy-looking one, the boxy-looking one. And I did some off-roading in it, and it's surprisingly capable off-road, this thing. It's got locking front and rear diffs and a fair bit of ground clearance, and it was pretty capable.
Excellent work. All right, Toby, terrific to have you on, as usual, as always, and happy motoring in a couple of weeks. We'll see you again.
Sounds like a plan.
Good on you.
This is Nightlife
with Philip Clark
on ABC Radio.
Toby is a professional motoring writer and also undertakes paid contract work for various automotive brands as an individual and in his business ventures too. But that commercial work's entirely separate from his editorial reviews. Toby's always committed to accuracy and fairness in all his reporting, and he will be with us again in a couple of weeks for another look at what's worth buying and what's worth wheeling around in the motor car business.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.